The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine. Welcome. Today, this is In the Garden with Master Gardeners, and you're here today with Tina Spindler and myself, Katrina Kirkaby, and we're going to be talking about what to do in the garden in October.
October is my favorite month of the year, Katrina.
I have a funny feeling I know why.
I am so tired of the heat, and the damage and the sadness that it has created in my garden that I'm really ready to be done with it. And so even though October is definitely not the prettiest month in my garden, it's my favorite month in the garden because I get to start over. It's like the beginning of a new era every October for me, because October's the best planting month of the year in Southern California.
Exciting. Now, last month we talked about cleaning out our gardens.
Yeah.
Were you able to do that this last month, Tina?
Not as much as I would have liked to, because I was melting every time I went out there. So, sadly, I did not do as much cleaning out as I usually would do. But that's okay. When I get ready to plant some new stuff this month in October, I'll take care of the cleaning out as I go through the garden.
I know. I felt like I should be called the Sunrise Gardener. It was so hot last month trying to do anything.
You're right. It's the only time you could go out there was when the sun was barely up.
But now it's October. A little shorter days. Hopefully it'll be a little cooler.
Shorter days, and it may still get hot during the day, but the day will be shorter, so there won't be as many hours of heat. And I don't know about you, but I have noticed that the temps at night are declining a bit more than they had been in September. So I'm excited.
And not only at night, but in the morning, there's a little bit of freshness in the air where it was so hot for a while in the morning.
Yeah, no, very, very nice to feel that bit of change. Hopefully there's more fall coming.
Yes, well, I see a big smile on Tina's face. This is her month. It's Tina's month.
This is my month. As folks who have listened know, I absolutely adore bulbs. They're one of my favorite things to grow. And the good news about bulbs in this time of drought is you can still plant them. They are not super water hungry. Some of them are water hungry, but some of them are pretty drought tolerant. And so I'm excited that I can indulge in a gardening activity and plants that I love without feeling too guilty about the whole water issue. And October and into November is the time to plant bulbs here in Southern California.
Tell us a little bit about bulbs. Where do we start with bulbs, Tina?
Well, the first thing you need to know about bulbs, and the reason that they're so foolproof, they're actually one of the first things I ever planted as a brand new homeowner. And the reason that they're kind of foolproof is they come with everything they need to produce a flower already in the bulb. So unlike a seed or a little six-pack flower or vegetable or even a one-gallon, shrub that you have to nurture and feed in order to get it to grow and produce fruit or veggie to eat or flowers that you can enjoy, the bulb has all the food in its structure. So when you plant that bulb, you already are kind of home free. As long as you give it a little water and you put it in a place where it's going to get an appropriate amount of light, you get flowers.
And that's amazing. So a lot of us are intimidated by bulbs.
It's so silly because they're just awesome.
Are you guys listening to this? Bulbs. I can't believe it. I'm intimidated by bulbs.
No, you have to try them. So think about Dutch iris, daffodils, freesias, ranunculus, anemones, and some of these I'm calling bulbs, but they're actually not technically bulbs. Some of them are corms, what we call corms. Some of them are rhizomes, but basically they are kind of a thick structure. So think of an onion. An onion is a bulb, and the bulbs like daffodils and tulips are true bulbs, and then the items that the ranunculus and what else? Anemones are grown from are actually called corms, and those are not a true bulb, but rather either a thick rhizome from a thickened part of the root, but not what is called a true bulb. But all of them, what they all have in common is they're not teeny tiny like a seed, right? A seed only has enough energy to send out that first cotyledon leaf and its initial roots. And from then on, you have to worry about feeding it, right? Or the soil has to have enough nutrients in it. But the bulb, or these corms or rhizomes, are these kind of fat structures. And when you plant them, the leaves and the roots get to feed off of that stored energy that's in that structure. And so, by and large, you end up getting a flower, unless there's, you know, a severe withdrawal of water or some really terrible soil conditions. But, I mean, why do you think we can force a narcissus to bloom indoors at Christmas? We put them in rocks, for heaven's sakes, right?
Right.
Yeah, so obviously that little plant doesn't need soil in order to have the nutrients to produce that flower. Those nutrients are already in that bulb structure.
Okay, Tina, let me ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
I am a new gardener.
Yes.
And I am trusting you that this is easy to do.
Yes.
So where do I start?
Well, you go to a garden center or a nursery, or here's a tip. I hope they carry them this year. Costco, of all places, is also someone that carries bags of bulbs. So, you know, there's so many different places.
Some of the big box stores.
Some of the big box stores, you know, Home Depot, Costco, Lowe's, those even carry bags of bulbs. But also the nurseries will carry, instead of big bags of assorted colors of bulbs, if you go to the local nurseries, they will usually have these really cool, like open-ended shoeboxes, kind of, that have a picture of the bulb on the end, and the bulbs are just loose. And so you get to select them like, you know, individual pieces of candy or something, you know. And you get those, remember, you know, you and I are of an age that we remember going to the type of candy store where you could get a little bag and, you know, choose your own individual mm-hmm. candies to put in them. Well, that's how you can bulb shop, too. So if you go to a garden center that sells the bulbs, you know, individually, then you can choose, you know, all pink or all white or all yellow and have these very nice color schemes. So the first step is to purchase your bulbs. And what you want to look for when you're purchasing them is a structure that is firm. So just like when you go to the grocery store, you wouldn't choose an onion that was squishy, right? If you feel one that's starting to go squishy, you know that that's not a good onion to pick. So think of the same kind of technique where you just squeeze the bulb a little bit to make sure that it hasn't started to rot. So that's the first thing you want to do, is to choose firm bulbs that don't look like they have started to decay. And then when you get home, you have two choices. You can either plant them in the ground, or these are awesome pot things. They are great for planting in pots. They love to grow in pots. And so you can then just get, you know, normal potting soil and plant them in pots. And the one thing that you do need to remember about bulbs is that you plant them in October and you don't see flowers until probably February and March. Depends on, you know, which variety you bought. Because particularly with the daffodils, there are early daffodils, mid-season daffodils, and late-season daffodils. So your bloom time is going to vary. And
so you're investing now for a future gain,
exactly.
So to speak.
Exactly. So the only warning I would give is, if you're putting them in pots, you know, don't think that you're going to sit that pot by your front door and have this beautiful display tomorrow. Not going to happen. So what I do, though, is I like to get a six-pack of pansies or violas or some other cool season, low-growing annual that's colorful. And when I plant the bulbs, and bulbs have to be planted fairly deep, generally about twice their height. So, you know, if you have a short little bulb like a freesia, which is only about 1 1/4 inches long, you would only want to plant that, you know, about 2 inches deep. But if you have a bigger bulb like a daffodil, you'd want to plant that about 3 inches deep. And so in between where you plant your bulbs, I like to set a little seedling, you know, little start transplant of say a viola or a pansy, and then fill soil in around that, and your bulbs will come right up through where your pansies are planted. But at least that way, you can set that pot on your patio or by your door, and you have something pretty to look at immediately. And then several months from now, you're going to have this extra surprise. So picture purple pansies, one of my favorite combinations, purple pansies, which you just enjoy for a few months, and then when the daffodils come up, a bright yellow daffodil.
Oh,
so you've got that
color coordinate,
you know, contrasting purple and yellow, just stunning. Or, you know, Dutch iris, those very elegant, long, you know, Dutch iris, which come in different colors, actually. They come in yellow and the dark purples and blues and whites. And, you know, you can combine that. You know, I've seen that, or have done the white Dutch iris with the orange pansies. What a cool combination that is. Just very striking.
Very beautiful.
But you can also plant them in the ground, and you can dig up a whole flower bed, you know, and amend the soil and till it like you would for planting any flower bed. But the bulbs are actually so sturdy that they don't necessarily need to have that super soft, friable soil. If you and I were planting a bed of snapdragons or stock or pansies, you know, some of our traditional cool season annuals, we would make sure that we tilled the whole bed, we added soil amendment and fertilizer, tilled it all in, and then planted our transplants, right? Because we want those little six-pack plants to have plenty of room for their roots to spread out and not hit that nasty clay soil and shrivel up. But the bulbs are very tenacious, and what you can use instead is there are what are called bulb augers, and they or bulb dibbers, and they are either a hand tool that has a handle and then a fat, long, probably like 8 to 10 inches long metal structure that comes to a point, and you are able to just put that point in the ground, wiggle it around to the depth that you need, and then drop your bulb right in that hole. I usually put a little fertilizer, you know, I'll make the holes first, put a little fertilizer in, and then cover the fertilizer up with just a tiny bit of soil and then drop the bulb in on top.
And it also depends on how hard your soil is, because some soil is pretty soft. If you've been amending your soil, it's just, you can almost dig it out with a tablespoon.
You could.
Or a trowel.
Yeah, use a trowel. That's a great idea if you have nice soft soil. But the interesting thing is I have another bulb tool, which is called a bulb planter, and it's on a handle like a shovel. But instead of a shovel blade at the bottom, you know, it's a long thing that you use standing up, it has what looks like an open-ended metal cup. So picture a red Solo cup that you cut the bottom out of, and it looks like that, only it's made of metal, and it's attached to the stem of a shovel, right? And then at the top, you have the handle that you can grab onto, and you actually can step on this thing like you step on a shovel, and it pushes this metal cylinder down into the ground. And then you wiggle it with the handle and pull it up, and it takes a core of soil out.
Now, I could see you having that, Tina, because you probably use that a lot.
Oh, my gosh. I use it so much that my hip will ache for days from stepping on that silly thing. You don't want to know how many hundreds of bulbs I have in my garden.
Oh, my goodness.
Every year, I probably plant another 200 bulbs. So it's just, it's an addiction, I know, but...
You should see your yard. Oh, my goodness. I wish we could have pictures on the air, because your yard is just so beautiful.
Yeah, in the late winter, spring, when the bulbs bloom, it's heaven. It truly is. We should figure out how to post some on our Master Gardener website so that folks can see, because it's pretty fun. Yeah. But anyway, it's worth the effort. There's actually another really good tool that I did just get last year, and I liked it a lot. There is actually a drill bit attachment that has a long stem on it. So, you know, you put a drill bit in your electric drill or your battery powered drill, and you drill a hole in the wall, right? Well, there's a device that fits in your drill that has a stem on it that's like, I don't know, 12 inches or so long. And at the end of it, there's a really fat, you know, drill spiral that you just go, you know, into the ground and you drill holes in your ground to plant your bulbs. And so it is, you know, it's a lot faster and easier on my hip than stepping on the other bulb planting device that I have. So
our listeners could get real gung-ho and do all these things, or they could use a trowel and plant a few bulbs.
Plant a few bulbs.
Of them work, right?
Exactly. The other cool thing, though, that I want to mention about bulbs is because they only bloom, you know, for a relatively short period of time, a few weeks to, you know, a month or 6 weeks, I used to, when I first started gardening, I went gung-ho and I bought 3 or 4 kinds of bulbs and I dug up my whole little flower bed in the front of the house that I lived in at the time. Not that big, you know, maybe 12 feet wide by 4 feet deep. And I planted the whole thing with bulbs and I was so excited and thought I had done such an amazing job. And when spring came, I was going to be the envy of the neighborhood. And then I get a letter from my homeowners association that tells me that I was in violation of the HOA rules and regulations because I didn't have anything planted in my garden, in that bed, and I needed to plant immediately. And I was so offended because I had, you know, 100 bulbs planted there, but like I said, you don't see them for months.
But now what you do is you could plant other things and they'll pop up through.
So what I do instead now is I have a lot of perennials in my garden, right? Mm. And we're going to talk about perennials in just a minute. And this is the time of year when you clean up your perennials. So you're going to dig them up, you're going to divide them, you're going to so on and so forth. We'll talk more about it in a minute. But what I do now, instead of planting whole beds of bulbs, is I plant patches in between the perennials. And so when the bulbs are done and their foliage is dying back, the perennials, it's the beginning of spring or mid-spring when that happens, and the perennials are just growing like gangbusters. So their foliage now
takes over
and covers up the, you know, dying off foliage of the bulbs. Because if you want your bulbs to what's called naturalize, and there are bulbs that will come back year after year, and those would be in our area, some daffodils, not all varieties, but some. There will be irises and freesias that are absolutely reliable about coming back every year. So I do try to plant those in between my perennials, and they come back and come back and come back. And then after, you know, 3 to 5 years, you need to dig them up because, like any plant, they get too crowded. And so you dig up the bulbs, break them apart because they will multiply, and then plant them in a new location where they have, you know, room to spread out.
Now, let me ask you a question because somebody asked this to me recently. When you said about dividing them, The question I was asked, why take them apart? Because if you're going to get a lot of them, why don't you just leave them there?
Because what happens is, so they all start out, we plant them, you know, depending on the size of the bulb, 2 to 4 inches apart, right? So they have that nice little space, all that soil belongs to them, and the nutrients from that soil and the water, that all belongs to them in that little circle that they have, that 6-inch circle that they have. Well, as they multiply, now they have to share the nutrients and the water that are in that 6-inch circle with 2 bulbs, then 3 bulbs, then 8 bulbs, then a dozen bulbs. And so now you have all of these structures competing for not enough nutrients and water. So that's why you divide them. Then you break them apart and you give them back their little, you know, 6-inch circle or 4-inch circle. So
and then you can plant those others someplace else.
Exactly. Give them to friends. It's, you know, it's free plants.
Put them in a pot and give them as a present.
Well, here's the deal. Once you, for pots, I buy fresh bulbs every year. Because remember how I said that the bulb has all the nutrients in it that that plant needs to bloom? Mm-hmm. Well, in a pot, you want to make sure that you're going to get blooms, right? Because your pots are the centerpieces and the highlight of your entryway or whatever. when you have bulbs growing in the ground and they've multiplied, remember they haven't had the space to produce that really fat structure because they've gotten crowded. So you could put them in a pot, but they might not bloom because they haven't had a chance to get to that real fat stage with all of those nutrients and food to produce the flower. So when I dig and divide bulbs in the garden, I replant them elsewhere in the garden. And they seem to do better. And also in the garden, you know, if they're in between some perennials and not all of them produce a flower, I'm not that, you know, upset about it. But if they were in a pot at my front door, I'd be real disappointed. So the new ones that you buy, plant in a pot, enjoy that great bloom they're going to have that first season. And then when the pot's done, put them out, put the bulbs out in the garden and let them do their thing out in the garden.
You know, Tina, a lot of people have also asked me about putting them in the refrigerator.
Yeah, so here's the deal. There are some bulbs that are not meant to grow in warm winter areas. They only grow in cool winter areas. And crocus and tulips would be two, and hyacinths would be three of that type. And people who came from back east, you know, love those bulbs. And when you say bulbs, they think tulip. I used to try to grow tulips out here. Pain in the neck. You have to chill them for 6 weeks in your refrigerator. They're supposed to be not close to apples because apples release a gas that isn't good for the bulbs. And so I just decided this is too much work. I'd rather grow things that are much easier and meant to grow in Southern California than tulips. So I personally don't plant any bulbs that require chilling.
Could you give us again which ones require chilling?
Sure. The most common ones are tulips, hyacinths, and certain crocus. Not all crocus, but certain crocus. And also some tulips do not. Some wild tulips, you know, don't, that have naturalized in warmer areas may not need it. But the ones that you typically see in the nursery centers, the big fat tulip bulbs and big fat hyacinth bulbs, those generally need pre-chilling.
Now, will they say it on the package if they need chilling or not?
I'm not sure. Probably depends on who made up the package. Because if these things were packaged, say, in Holland, and they're being sold in the East,
all over is just fine.
You know, everybody gets chill except for silly California. So it might not say. But what you could do is, if you do love tulips and you want to go through the process of chilling, buy them. I would buy them at a knowledgeable nursery and ask the nurserymen if these bulbs need to be pre-chilled. Because at those types of store, they usually have certified nursery people who can give you that advice.
Okay, so if we wanted to make it a little easier on ourselves, we would go more for the daffodils and the irises and the freesias that don't need the chilling?
Yes, absolutely. But I haven't talked about ranunculus much, and I have to because that's my very, very favorite flower in the whole world.
Really?
Yeah, so ranunculus is a corm, and if folks have never gone to the ranunculus fields down in Encinitas, Carlsbad area, it's called the Flower Farms. You can just Google Flower Farms. It is the most spectacular sight you've ever seen when they're in bloom in March, April. And it's where they grow these flowers to produce the corms that are then sold to us the next year for our flower gardens. They're a little bit trickier than the big bulbs like narcissus and daffodils. The terms are sometimes used interchangeably. Any of the big bulbs are pretty easy and straightforward to grow. And the freesias, which are a South African bulb, are super easy to grow because they're completely adapted to a Mediterranean climate. South Africa has the same Mediterranean climate as we do. And those silly things just grow all over the place, and you plant them once and they come back and come back and come back. But the ranunculus are a little trickier because they don't like to be planted very deep, and they are subject to rot. And so you can plant them in the ground, but those I would not plant in an area where the soil has not been amended. I would plant those in an area where you have dug up the soil, added amendment and fertilizer, you know, like a normal flower bed. And then you only plant them 1 inch deep and you don't water them too much, because if they get too much water, they're subject to rot. But the reason I adore them is that the flowers have, I swear, several hundred petals, and they come in the most stunning, bright, brilliant colors, bright yellows, oranges, pinks, purples, reds. They look like a rose, like the old-fashioned English roses that have those gajillion petals on them. They look similar to that, or like a peony flower with a gajillion petals. That's why I adore them, because they are just a stunning flower. Really, really pretty. But a little harder to grow, say, than freesias or daffodils or iris. So if you're new to bulbs, I would pick daffodils or narcissus, kind of the same plant, iris and freesias. Those three would be the ones that I would choose if you were a beginner to bulbs, because they're pretty much foolproof. They're also the ones that will naturalize.
And even if you're not a beginner, you just don't have the time, and it's just something easy to do, and you want to have a great splash, and you don't want to spend your whole life in the garden, but make it look like you have.
Right, right. They're stunning. Do it. It's so fun.
Now, do you do ranunculus in pots too?
Yeah. So any of these can be done in pots. In fact, what I mostly do with ranunculus now is I start in six packs, and the reason I do that is I have bunnies. My yard is not fenced, and they love the first tender leaves that come out of the ground from the ranunculus. And so what I've learned to do is I start them in six packs, and I let them get about 6 inches tall, and then I plant them in the garden. And then, this is how much I love this plant, I make little chicken wire cylinder cages, and I put them over each plant until they get mature enough that the bunnies can't destroy them. I know, it's ridiculous. As my daughter says, you take better care of your plants than you did us, Mom.
I'm not going to make any comments about that.
Not true, but... Anyway, I've rambled on enough about bulbs. We need to move on to other things.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many things to move on to. You know what? Maybe what we'll do, we're just about, the timing is perfect. I need to do a station ID. So let me tell everybody that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And also, the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about the show, go to kuci.org. All right, Tina, what should we talk about next?
Oh gosh, there's so much. I shouldn't have rambled about bulbs so long, but hopefully people will give them a try. So let's talk next about native and drought-tolerant plants. And
it's that time to talk about that.
Yeah. What have we been telling people all summer?
We've been telling them, wait.
We didn't want you to try and plant these poor plants in the heat of summer, when they would just shrivel up and die and not be happy. So
now is the time. If you're going to plant them, now is a good time to start planting them.
So if you were waiting all summer to switch out your water-thirsty garden to a drought-tolerant garden, now's the time to do it. And, of course, as we've talked in previous months, hopefully you have planned what you're going to do already so that you're ready to get to work right now. If you haven't, what you need to do is make your plant selection first. Then you have to figure out what your irrigation system is going to be. And we're hoping that you might be able to switch from overhead spray to a more efficient irrigation system like drip irrigation. And then finally, you need to install that irrigation system, and then you can install your plants. So the plants that you want to consider are, there's just too many for us to talk now. You can obviously go to places that specialize in native plants. We have a local nursery in Orange County, Tree of Life, which is a grower that specializes in native and drought-tolerant plants. But even the big box retailers now are having entire sections devoted to natives and drought-tolerant. And, of course, all of the local nurseries have sections that are devoted to that and knowledgeable people who can help you choose and tell you about the planting requirements for each of those plants that you decide to choose. The one thing you do not want to do is you do not want to mix native or drought-tolerant plants in with your existing water-hungry plants, because no one's going to be happy if you do that.
Your drought-tolerant plants won't be happy, and your water-thirsty plants won't be happy.
There's no way to irrigate those two and keep them happy, because they have such different needs.
So, Tina, what you might be saying is, if you're going to work on a section of a garden, pick out a section of the garden and say, okay, I'm going to do drought-tolerant in this section.
Exactly.
And it might be hard to get rid of some of your other plants, but in the long run, if you're trying to get to drought-tolerant and you have this hydrangea in the middle of it, it's not going to work.
No, it's not. So you're just going to have to bite the bullet and pull out those water-thirsty plants. October's actually a good time to try and transplant some things. So perhaps, you know, there is an area of your garden where you're going to devote a little more water, and so maybe you want to transplant some of your things that you're taking out to a different area. But just make sure that all plants that are in a particular irrigation zone are happy with similar amounts of water. Otherwise, you will lose them.
And then it comes to why. You know, why would you go through all that work if you're not going to do it? So it's just a real simple. It might be hard emotionally, but if you make that decision and to say, this is going to be where my thirstier plants are going to be, and this is where my drought-tolerant plants are going to be, that's just if you're going to keep your thirstier plants.
Right.
And if you're not, then that's not an issue. But if you are, try to separate them somehow.
Exactly. Remember that you can mix bulbs in with your native plants, because there are some bulbs that are the South African bulbs, for instance. Freesias aren't the only one. There's lots of others, Watsonia and others that are Babiana, that are happy with dry summers. That's how they evolved. And so you can decide to include bulbs with your drought-tolerant garden. And what will happen is they'll bloom in the wintertime. They'll grow and bloom in the wintertime, and you'll be treated to that spectacular little burst of color. And then the foliage will die back, and then you'll just have the surrounding shrubs to enjoy the rest of the year. It's a great option to include some seasonal color.
And I missed a little bit this year of my seasonal color, and that's a great way if you're really trying to be water tolerant and be conscious, is those bulbs just won't take up any more.
No, and here's another little tidbit that you can do to get some seasonal color. When you plant your new drought-tolerant or native garden, your shrubs will most likely be small, and you'll want to space them properly, not too close together. And so you'll have some expanses of soil that's in between those plants that's going to look empty. One of the things that you can do is you can get a California wildflower mix, or just use straight California poppies, and you can sow those in those open areas, and hopefully they will naturalize. You'll at least get one season of bloom, you know, the year that you plant them. And in the case of some of those wildflowers, they will self-sow, and you might get them for multiple seasons.
You know, you mentioned something, Tina, that not only the new gardener needs to take an account, that I also need to take an account, because I've been guilty of this before. I get this little plant, and I think it's little, and I plant it, and then I look and it says, oh, it grows to 4 feet. But I really don't give it credit for growing to 4 feet. And then I plant something a little too close to it. And then it looks, when they do grow, it looks too crowded.
Oh, it's the bane of our existence here in Southern California. You know, we have so many new neighborhoods that landscapers have been trained when they plant these new plantings to make it look like it's been there for a while, so they overplant. And then those of us who own the home for a few years are then stuck with a mess, you know, these plants that are growing into each other, and we either have to constantly keep trimming them or we start pulling them out.
So when you're planting this year and you're doing your drought tolerant, then you've got that little 1 gallon plant, look and see how big it grows.
Absolutely.
And then plant your flowers or your bulbs or your poppies or whatever to fill that space in until it grows.
Or the other thing to do is if you don't want to plant extra stuff, mulch. You know, a layer of mulch makes your yard look so tidy and pristine, and it makes the plants, even if they're small and young, just pop against that nice, even brown color of the mulch. So mulch is the solution for everything as far as I'm concerned.
I love mulch. And I, you know, talking a little bit about segueing a little bit, talking about water, I have grass, I have a lot of stuff, and I've had to be really careful to stay under my water allotment. And I think it's the mulch. I mean, I'm very conscious about how I water, but I have a lot of mulch, and it's helping dramatically. And it looks like I've really did something. When the mulch goes down, like you said, it cleans it up. It looks pretty. Those open spaces that you have from those gallon plants that are going to grow 4 feet, put some mulch around that. It makes it look better. It keeps the water in. Looks great.
Keeps the weeds down.
Oh, yeah.
Our very favorite thing about mulch is we don't have to weed as much. It's a great solution to helping a lot of different conditions in your garden. So we have talked about it on a lot of other shows and just encourage people to mulch. I mulch twice a year. This is one of the times of year when I mulch is in the fall. So after I do my fall planting, you know, all this month, right before I have guests for Thanksgiving, I have the gardener lay down a layer of mulch. And then when the company comes, the yard looks, you know, pristine and tidy and new.
Great idea.
Yeah. So let's move on.
Okay.
We want to cover more stuff.
Oh, yes. Okay, we got to cover vegetables because I love vegetables.
Yes, and this is our time to plant our cool season crops. What are you planting, Katrina?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I you know, cauliflower and broccoli and
what are you doing, lettuces?
I'm going to do lettuce as soon as it gets a little bit cooler. It's still kind of hot where I'm at. And we've been cleaning out the beds and prepping the beds and, oh, just getting all excited for the new stuff coming in.
So tell everybody how you prep your vegetable beds, because that's really important, because the summer crops, you know, took a lot of nutrients out of that soil. What are you doing to get them ready for the veggie crops? Are you adding new fertilizer? You adding soil amendment?
You know, one of the biggest things is cleaning it up.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just actually starting off with a clean palate, and we put compost in there.
Nah, there you go.
We compost in our yard.
Yeah.
I love our compost, and all year long we're composting, and we're, you know, we get it ready for our vegetables in the fall and in the spring. So we do a lot of compost.
Yeah, there's nothing better than homemade compost to add back organic matter into your soil and also, you know, some nutrients. And then, of course, you probably also add, you know, organic veggie fertilizer when you're tilling in the compost, I assume.
Yes. And if you don't do it yourself, we have a big backyard, so we're able to compost. But you can go to a lot of places and just buy bags of it.
Yeah.
And that you could do it that way, too.
Yeah. Well, in my veggie garden, I was trying to jump the gun and, you know, lesson to myself. It was too hot. Like you said, you're waiting to plant lettuce, but oh no, I thought I would get a jump on it. And, of course, it fried. So I wasn't very successful there with these 90 to 100 degree days. So I think I'm going to wait, till mid-October probably to retry planting my lettuce crop. I tried to do it at the end of September, but it was just too hot. But yeah, I'm excited because actually my winter veggie garden is my more favorite veggie garden. I do love the summer tomatoes. There's nothing better. But I adore the greens, you know, all the different lettuces that you can't get in the store, the speckled ones and, you know, the varieties of the butter crunch and the red romaines and, you know, all of those that, you know, you can't get unless you go to a farmer's market maybe, but the general grocery store, you know, just doesn't have those. And I love lettuce because you get the most bang for your buck from a space standpoint.
Oh, my goodness.
You just harvest those outer leaves.
And just keeps going.
You have in a 4x4 space, I couldn't eat all the lettuce, you know, last winter. It was, for the two of us, a 4x4 foot space of lettuce was way more than two people could eat. So I love it because it gives you the bang for the buck. So, yeah, so October, great time to plant these cool season veggies, and you can do them from seed or from six packs. Later in the winter, you can keep planting veggies But in October, I think the seeds are the way to go because the soil's still warm and the seeds germinate so fast.
And you have such a variety you could have with seeds.
So many choices that you can't get at the nursery.
And it's cheap.
So cheap. For $2 to $4, you get a packet of seeds that gives you dozens of plants. It's just crazy. And so I love to do, my favorite things to do from seed are any of the lettuces, arugula. My new favorite veggie, kale. And the root veggies, the beets and the carrots and the onions. So those are the ones I love to plant from seed this time of year. The trick is, and you know what killed me when I tried to do it in September, is you got to keep the seeds moist. And when I planted, when the temperatures went up into the 90s, that didn't work so well.
No, it kind of took some. I know that one.
Yeah. So anyway, hopefully in mid-October it will be cooler, but the soil will still be warm compared to what it's like in, say, December or January.
Okay, let me tell them one more thing not to do, because I did this. I thought, well, maybe it's too hot, but I really want to plant it, so I'll kind of plant it in the shade with a little bit of sun. But it doesn't quite work really well. It does need that sun.
Yeah, the lettuce doesn't like heat, but it does like sun. It will take less sun than some other veggies. It'll actually make do with 4 to 6 hours of sun, but it's got to have sun. You know,
you've got to have sun.
You can't put it in shade or part shade. Yeah,
it just didn't quite work. And then when I had too much sun, and it bolted.
Yeah, it can be a little tricky. But the cool thing about lettuce is you can eat it at so many stages. You know, you sow the seed and it's up in just a few days, and then in like 2 weeks, it's big enough for you to thin and take the baby lettuces and turn that into a salad. And then you eventually let the ones that you leave, you know, grow into heads, but you keep harvesting the outer leaves so that you can eat off of it for 3 months or 4 months or so.
You know, another one I love is kale.
Oh,
and I've been growing kale all year long.
I am too.
And it's been wonderful. It's easy to grow. And I'm growing a whole bunch of different kinds of it.
Oh, are you?
Oh, it's just, what's my, cosmic kale is my find this year.
Oh.
I love cosmic kale. It's not quite as bitter. And sometimes I'll just go and pick some of each plant, and I'll have 4 or 5 different kinds, and I wash them off and chop them up or rip them up. And it's great. Or you could do a salad of just one, and the next day do a salad of a different kind of kale, and they look different, and they have a little different taste to it. And they're no-brainers in growing.
Yeah, kale is such a sturdy plant. Out at the Great Park Demonstration Garden, the Farm and Food Lab, we once had a couple of kale plants that lived for over 2, maybe even into 3 years, and it looked like a Dr. Seuss plant. This kale plant was almost 7 feet tall, and it started, you know, to bend over. But we just had kept, harvesting the outer leaves. And so the stem was, you know, blank. It was just this naked stem 6 feet up. But there were the little kale leaves at the very top, still new and tender. And you would harvest them and, you know, leave the center growing part so that it would continue to produce more kale leaves. But honest, my kale that I planted last October, I finally pulled out in August, but only because we'd been gone on vacation and it had gotten infested with insects, and I couldn't, you know, I'd been gone too long to rescue it. So I agree with you. It's one of my favorite plants. I'll give you, I don't know how you do your kale salads, but I had a kale salad that was actually, the leaves were, you know, cut the thick stem out of it, the big kale leaves, you know, kind of the, not super tough, but, you know, the big ones. And I just cut the stem out, and then I fold them in half, and I make like a little stack of them. And I take my kitchen scissors, and I cut crosswise so that they're in like julienne strips.
Mm-hmm.
So they're real thin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make a lemon vinaigrette dressing, and I put that on like 30 minutes before we're going to have dinner. And so it kind of marinades in that, but the kale leaves are, you know, pretty thick, so they don't wilt like lettuce will.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're julienne so thin, and then they kind of marinate for a little while, the kale salad is not tough and bitter like it can be sometimes. So that's just a little hint for our listeners.
It's very similar to what I always cut the stem out.
No
matter what I'm doing, I cut the stem out. It really makes a difference. And then I do it the way you do it sometimes, and sometimes I tear it, and sometimes I julienne it. And I usually do something, I believe, what's the word, macerate? Because about 10 minutes before you eat, or whenever, you break it up.
With your hands.
With your hands, and just break it up with your hands.
And
It tenderizes
the tissue.
And then I also do either balsamic and a little bit of olive oil. I really love the lemon in olive oil with a little bit of salt in it.
And
it just pops it up. And it's nice when you're having company, because you could do it all ahead of time.
Exactly.
And then I'll throw maybe some other vegetables I have in with it from my garden.
Oh, there's so many things you can do with it. You know, I love to shred carrot and put carrot in it.
I put tomatoes and cucumbers.
Or apple. I love chopped apple and maybe even sliced grapes in it. I mean, there's just so much. You can put pine nuts, toasted pine nuts in it.
Yep.
Or walnuts or pecans. It's just, it's an endless option of what to do. But honestly, when I have kale, we eat it at least twice a week, and nobody gets tired of it because I keep throwing new stuff in it, different stuff.
I'm the same thing. And, you know, I have kale pretty much all year long.
Yeah.
You know, I plant it throughout the whole year.
That's great.
And it just, some of the newer ones, when it's younger, it's a little more tender, but we can get going on that. Tell me more about what you put in your garden.
Well, I do want to give people a little hint about carrots, because I tried this last year. It was something that I read in Pat Welsh's Southern California organic gardening book, and she has, I love to grow homemade carrots. I love their sweetness, and I love that you can go out in your garden for a really long time because they stay in the ground so long. I swear I left mine in for 6 months, you know, and you just go out and you harvest the ones that you need. And when you first start harvesting, they're the little baby tender carrots, and then later on, of course, they get to be the bigger carrots. But she had a tip for germinating carrot and other parsley family seeds that I thought was, you know, really useful, and I tried it, and it really helped a lot. And what she advises you to do is, you know, of course, you prepare your soil like you do in a vegetable bed, and then you have your little row, and you sprinkle your carrot seeds along the row. And another tip about sprinkling carrot seeds, because they are little, is you can mix them with sand and sprinkle it with the sand. That way, hopefully, they don't all clump together. Mm-hmm. You know, they're spaced out better. But then you don't cover them up right away. You go inside and you turn on your kettle. You fill your kettle with water and turn on your kettle and boil the water. And then you take it outside and you pour it along the seed row.
Really?
Yeah. And so what that does is it, what's called scarifies the seed coat, and some seeds germinate more quickly if you scarify the seed coat. And some seeds have to be scarified or they don't germinate well at all. But carrot seeds and members of the parsley family are those seeds which benefit from scarification. And what that does is that it allows those seeds to germinate in just a few days, as opposed to, you know, carrot seeds usually take a pretty long time to germinate. And for me anyway, the germination can be a little bit spotty. You know, you'll have one clump where you've got a ton of little seedlings, and then you have to thin them. And for whatever reason, you know, the next few inches of your row are very sparse. Maybe it's just I didn't spread the seeds evenly. But I find that when I use this boiling water, it really helps get them to germinate fast. And it also, therefore, because they've germinated quickly, they mature. You know, more. You've shortened the length of time that you need to have a mature carrot. So anyway, just wanted to pass on that tip. After you pour the boiling water on, of course, you then do cover the seeds, you know, with the soil like you normally would. But pouring that boiling water on just speeds up your germination and your harvest.
Exciting. Tell me, what else are you planting?
Well, I like beets, and I love snap peas. So I'm doing snap peas for root vegetables, beets, carrots, and onions. Then, of course, the snap peas, and then tons of green. then I will buy 6 packs of broccoli and cauliflower because it's you can grow it from seed, but I just think it's easier to start it from starts than doing those crops from seed. So that's just my personal preference.
Exciting. What haven't we talked about? Perennials.
Yeah, I mentioned perennials before about how you can plant bulbs in between your perennials, and I mentioned quickly that it's a great time of year to do that because you're going to be possibly digging up and dividing your perennials or at least cleaning them up. So let's talk about why you want to do that. So some of the perennials I'm thinking about would be daylilies, Shasta daisies, Rudbeckia, Clivia, the sages. So, you know, kind of a variety of these perennials. And what has happened over the growing season, some of them bloom in spring, some of them bloom in the summer, some of them bloom in the fall. But by October, most of them, maybe the sages are still going, but most of the rest of them, you know, they're looking pretty sad. They're looking pretty scraggly. The heat has probably not been kind to them. And so they'll have a lot of dead leaves. They'll have some spent flower stalks, you know, like the daylily flower stalks will just be there with no daylilies on them anymore. So what we want to do is we want to remove all the flower stalks. We want to pull off all those dead leaves that are, you know, underneath the alive leaves and make them look nice and tidy. Now, some of them, like the daylilies, for instance, which grow in a clump, the clump might have gotten maybe a little bigger than you want it, you know, where it is. My Shasta daisies seem to spread out everywhere, and I have stepping stones through the paths in my flower beds, and sure enough, there are the Shasta daisies growing in between the stepping stones. And so it's just a good time to take a look at these perennials. If they're too big or they've spread places you don't want, dig them up, give them to a friend, and plant them in other places in your garden. My entire garden is covered with Shasta daisies because I just keep moving them, you know, to a new section of the garden, and they are indestructible. The bunnies don't even eat them, and they come back and, you know, produce flowers year after year.
Wonderful. You know what else I've done? I've done a pruning on some of my plants, and right now, while it's still warm out there, I'll cut back some of my salvias and some of my other things that have just are still big and beautiful and gorgeous, but I know they won't look like that in 2 months.
Yeah.
And I cut them back now, and I did this a couple weeks ago, and I really substantially cut them back, and guess what's growing now? All this new growth while it's still sunny and warm.
Absolutely. And so you just...
And they'll look clean during the wintertime instead of straggly during the wintertime.
Exactly.
It was just hard for me to cut things that were blooming.
Yeah, because sometimes they do still have blooms on, and so that is a little hard, but you're right.
I'm getting blooms again. It's only been a couple weeks.
Yeah, with this warm weather, the plants are just saying, hey, yay, let's grow. But the other thing to notice, too, on some of the perennials, like I notice on some of my sages, which I'm, you know, some of them are going strong, like the Mexican sage is in full bloom right now, so I won't touch that. That's a fall bloomer. Just enjoy it till it's finished. But some of my other sages, you know, are kind of finished, and they have these long stalks on them where they bloomed. But if you look down at the base of the plant, then you see all this fresh new green growth. And in the case of plants that have that type of growth habit, feel free to take that stalk and cut it all the way down to the base of the plant where you see the new growth coming out. And as you said, you know, sometimes you can just kind of give a light trim to the whole surface, but other times you can go all the way down to the base and have the plant then devote its energy into producing that, you know, great new growth from the base of the plant. And then the other thing that you can do, too, is fall is the best time to plant. Obviously, that's all we've talked about. This whole show today is plant, plant, plant. So, yeah, get your shovel ready. That's and your trowels and your spades, because that's what you need to do this month. But if there are perennials, you know, we've already talked about native and drought-tolerant, you know, plants and perennials. But if there are some of the more traditional, slightly more water-hungry perennials that you would like to get and add to your garden, this is the time of year to do it. It's a great time to plant perennials.
And why is that, Tina?
The reason is that the soil is still warm, so the plant is not going to have a shock type of period. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody thinks that March and April is the best time to plant, and it is a great time to plant. It's the second best time of the year to plant after October. But remember, the soil has not warmed up yet in March and April. That soil is cold, relatively speaking, because we've been through winter. However, the October soil is still warm. And so when you put a new plant in that warm soil, it's a happy camper. It doesn't go into shock. And then guess what? We get rain. Knock wood. We get rain. And then that plant gets to benefit from that natural rainfall. It has the cool temperatures of winter and spring to really get settled in. And then when it starts to get warm and the longer days come in springtime, boom, it's ready to just start blooming and growing like crazy.
Oh, I'm excited. Did you know the Fullerton Arboretum this weekend now is having a plant sale?
So, this weekend.
So our listeners might look that up. I believe there's a plant sale over there for vegetables and whatnot.
Yeah.
So if you got your garden already, that might be a place to go find some unique kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
I am too.
That sounds cool. They usually have cool stuff there too.
Yeah. A little different. That's what I like about it.
Different things than you typically see in the nursery or big box retailers. So, yeah, that's a great tip.
Yeah, and we're also telling people about all this stuff. If you have questions, I want to give everybody our website number, address. You could look us up at www.ucanr.org. Excuse me, I was just giving you the Master Food Preserver again. I love doing that. I'm just hooked.
It's okay. We love Master Food Preservers.
Okay. It's www.uccemg.com. There's all kinds of interesting information on there. You could just hop around and look at it. You could also, if you have a question, you go, how do I do this? What did they say? We have a group of people that love answering questions, and they're really good at it. We have something called the hotline, and you could write in your question. If you're having a problem with a plant, take a picture of your plant, send them a question, and that hotline number is hotline@uccemg.com. They're a great group of people. They love doing this. They love researching. They'll tell you what they know. They tell you what if they can't find an answer for you, but usually they're able to direct you in a really good way.
Yeah, they just send them an email to that email address, and you will get your own private, personalized answer from a master gardener. Kind of a deal that's too hard to beat.
I know, and these people are really knowledgeable, and they have a whole group of people with them that are really knowledgeable. And also, check out our website. There's a lot of interesting things. We've touched about a bunch of stuff here, but you could look up all kinds of stuff on our website, and we'd love to help out. And Tina, I think we're about to end of our time, and I need to let everybody know that they are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. And Tina, I think we've come to our time, and I think we need to say goodbye for now.
Yes, goodbye. Grab a shovel. Get out there and plant.
Plant, 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 and plant some more. Until next time.